Blog Talk Radio.
And this is Ralph Pointer, What's Happening, Blog Talk Radio. And as the Chinese curse says, may you live through interesting times. And we are definitely living through interesting times. And this is a news analysis, an anatomy of oppression, which requires an understanding of colonialism and imperialism. An anatomy of the American capitalist system and what props this system up. And tonight our theme is the first rule of all life is self-defense. We must understand and focus on this problem with clarity in order to solve the problem. Again, I will repeat, the first rule of all life is self-defense and self-preservation. We must understand and focus on this problem with clarity in order to solve the problem. And as usual, we have rounded up the usual suspects. We have some special guests in the house tonight that we're going to be featuring. But, Ralph Pointer, what's happening?
Good evening, my brothers and sisters. Thank you
for participating with us this evening, because you may be able to tell by my voice, I am flying high with the exhilaration of just coming from a demonstration at Barclays Center. And the contingent that I was with young people. I think the oldest person in this contingent, other than myself, was 29 years old. And I'm at the ripe old age of 87. I was able to give them some insights into the history of the movement. Of course, you know what the issue in the demonstration was about. It was a conviction. It was the issue of the conviction of a serial killer cop, an army of occupation member. And we have repeated this theme, the first rule of all life is the rule of self-defense. And how do we participate in self-defense in this program? We participating by defending those who defended us, our political prisoners who stepped out there many years ago when we were in dire need of a pick-me-up as we are today. But let me skip to what this demonstration, the thing that I feel so exhilarated about, not only that the young people were there, but the young and old came together. But the most important issue was that most of the people there understood what this victory was not. They understood that this conviction didn't mean much. They understood that this conviction created a sigh of relief in army of occupation contingents all over the country, because any other conclusion would have created a response, a just response, a just angry response. But it was a wonderful thing to see people who understood, in spite of the Democratic Party hacks who were out there talking about being on a demonstration. I won't even tell you those old names, Al Sharpton and the rest of the crew, for tomorrow. But the people today knew that this did not mean that there was an improved criminal justice system. They understood that it was business as usual. But because they had bore witness to this criminal activity, this army of occupation action, they bore witness in the streets for a year. And thus, they created the verdict, the only verdict that this state, this country dared give. And so, at this conclusion, we have many voices this evening. But I'm happy to have been one of the speakers at this demonstration. And I reminded them of a situation that happened years ago when the Supreme Court was about to decide the legitimacy of the death penalty. And at the same time, there was a convicted white gentleman on death row. And the question was, is the death penalty justified or is it illegal because it's racist? And the young man on death row said, I'm a dead man because they have to kill me, they have to murder me to prove that the death penalty is not racist. They did murder him, and I call it murder because so many times in the death penalty, too many times, and if you get it wrong once, it's too many times, and they got it wrong more than once, and death is final. The state has no right to put folks to death. Therefore, I am very upbeat, and I will release the microphone for the wonderful speakers. And we have to go to our wonderful, wonderful Professor Louis to pick us up. Truth, justice, in a poetic sense. Sister Betty.
No, Professor Louis, glad you're in the house. We know most of you might have wanted to stay glued to the television set to watch and listen to all the hypocrisy and curse your breath, but we're glad that you're here.
Your microphone is open.
All right. Where does all the money go? Check your pockets. You ain't got no dough. No matter what you do or what you know, tell me where the money goes. Now, I know you feel politicians steal. That's for real. But what's the real deal? They're making money at our expense, trying to take a dollar out of 50 cents. The president, the Congress, bought and sold. That's old. It's cold, but who paid the gold? It cost millions of dollars to get elected. Who got selected? Who was rejected? The big corporations paid the campaign. They don't put their money down the drain. They paid the Republican. They paid the Democrat. Don't matter who wins. They like it like that. It's corporate power. Hour after hour, while you sleep deep in your ivory tower, they're taking all the money that once was ours. It's all gone, John, to corporate power. So now that politician, through and through, he'll do what the corporation wants him to. Because now he got a corporate agenda. Make, break, take, and bend you like a bad joke. Till the government's broke everywhere. Because the big corporations won't pay their share of taxes. The maxes for some. They do a whole year of business and don't pay none. That's not profit. It's capital gain. While you feel the pain, you're out in the rain. They get tax abatements, government contracts, humongous loopholes. You know the facts, because when you got to pay, hey, what the heck, they already took the money out of your check. It's corporate power. Hour after hour, while you sleep deep in your ivory tower, they're taking all the money that once was ours. It's all gone, John, to corporate power. So these politicians got no shame, but just the same, they need someone to blame. So they blame the immigrant trying to make a buck, blame the lady on welfare down on her luck, blame the junkie. Deny the bail, but corporations make money off the people in jail. They blame the unions, cut them down to size. They don't like workers who get organized. They blame Mexico, China, taking jobs from you. But they work for Nike in China, too. They blame all the Muslims, throw them under the bus. We're allowed to kill them, but they can't kill us. And the biggest blame you're ever going to see, that's home alone with your TV. Because your TV news gives you the blues. They just ooze with the views of the big corporations. There's no complication to the explanation of the situation. The corporation owns the station, and they tell you who to blame for the pain, but they never really name from where the pain came, from corporate power, hour after hour, while you sleep deep in your ivory tower. They're taking all the money that once was ours. It's all gone, John, to corporate power. So corporate profits, they're on fire. The stock market, higher and higher. The economy, it's getting real good. Of course, you never see it in your neighborhood because so many people lost their jobs. The company sobbed. They turned the doorknob. We're sorry, slob. Sad but true. We're doing so good that we don't need you, ding-a-ling, because every damn thing all across the nation is all owned by the same corporations. They own the drug company, the hospital, too. Managed care owns the doctor looking at you. They make money from guns, money from prison, money from insurance, money from the collision. They sell you cosmetics with your last dime. Designer clothes, their name is the design. Charge you way too much for a gallon of gas. Sell you plastic surgery and cut your ass. They in South America, Africa, Asia. Those sneakers on your feet, they're from Malaysia, because these big companies are worldwide. Pushing in the bush, everybody aside, and the biggest ones got that special situation. They hide inside your TV station. Commercials for cars, commercials for beer, every minute of the day, every second of the year. General Motors, Budweiser, AT&T, they're the friendly faces on your TV, because they'll make your enemy look like your friend. Don't bend. They'll shaft you in the end, because it's not about friends. It's all about money. And the ones who got it, they're not funny, sonny. Million billionaires, where the money goes, millions on clothes, private shows, millions and millions up somebody's nose. And they own the government head to toes, because when that politician leaves the government, he knows where he goes. He don't need a hint. He sits on the board of the big corporations, going back and forth like changing stations from government to business, back for more, round, round, and round the revolving door. So you see, the whole society, it is not made for you and me. Stop, look, and listen. Stop. Bottom to top, it's corporate power that calls the shots. And the president, the Congress, who run the nation, they're just front men for the big corporations. It's corporate power. Hour after hour, while you sleep deep in your ivory tower, they're taking all the money that once was ours. It's all gone, John, to corporate power. So there's a lot to do for me and you. This world keeps turning. It is never through. Free your mind. Clear your brain. The pain is when we stay the same, because, you know, we love this corporate stuff. SUVs, 5Gs, it's never enough. And that's rough, because it's tough to change through and through. Sad but true. They got you loving the hand that's beating on you. But maybe someday, baby, we will all wake up. Analyze, get wise. Enough is enough, because when we are together, I can tell you all, the bigger they come, the harder they fall. And quiet as it's kept, it ain't no joke. This world belongs to the regular folks. But we got to get up and get what's ours and take a bite tonight out of these corporate powers. It's corporate power. Hour after hour, they get the sweet, we get the sour. We get the weeds, they get the flower. It's a private airplane calling the tower. They're down in the jacuzzi instead of the shower, taking all the money that once was ours. It's all gone, John, to corporate power.
Hey, thank you so much, Professor Louis. And does this wake you up and want you to participate? It should. And remember, this program is archived. Whenever you're down, just tune it in and listen to Professor Louis to educate you. It's wonderful. Thanks again, Professor Louis. And the people are calling in. We got to tell them to wait and get on the program. That's great, Professor Louis.
All right.
All right, Professor Louis, you're probably going to hear your ears ringing because I'm recommending you for several Zooms that are coming up. One of them is, I believe, Jericho is going to have an open house, and I'm hoping you'll repeat your performance that you did the last time Jericho had a celebration.
Sure thing.
Okay, good news. Sister Ann Lamb, New York City, Jericho, and Brother Henry Hagen of the New York City Mamiya Coalition, your mics are open. Sister Ann, we'll start with you. And I hope somebody has an update on Mamiya's surgery this morning, whichever one of you wants to do it. But Sister Ann has a special request from us on a New York Times article around the Chauvin decision, whatever it was going to be. Sister Ann, can you still do that for us?
I can still do that, but I can give you an update on Mumia's surgery first. Surgery was successful, no complications, so that's all to the good. Very happy to hear that. And also, some United Nations special rapporteurs just put out a whole statement about Mumia and the shackling, you know, and so on and so forth, which is really important. So if I get a chance, I would read it. It's short. But I'll do the New York Times things now because it is interesting. This was published in the Times on April 17th and updated yesterday on the 19th. Just 7 hours before prosecutors opened their case against Derek Chauvin, a former Minneapolis police officer charged with murdering George Floyd, a Chicago officer chased down a 13-year-old boy in a West Side alley and fatally shot him as he turned with his hands up. One day later, at a hotel in Jacksonville, Florida, officers fatally shot a 32-year-old man who, the police say, grabbed one of their tasers. The day after that, as an eyewitness to Mr. Floyd's death broke down in a Minneapolis courtroom while recounting what he saw, a 40-year-old mentally ill man who said he was being harassed by voices was killed in Claremont, New Hampshire, in a shootout with the state police. On every day that followed, all the way through the close of testimony, another person was killed by the police somewhere in the United States. The trial has forced a traumatized country to relive the gruesome death of Mr. Floyd beneath Mr. Chauvin's knee. But even as Americans continue to process that case and anxiously wait for a verdict, new cases of people killed by the police mount unabated. Since testimony began on March 29th, at least 64 people have died at the hands of law enforcement nationwide, with black and Latino people representing more than half of the dead. As of Saturday, the average was more than 3 killings a day. The deaths culled by New York Times from gun violence databases, news media accounts, and law enforcement releases offer a snapshot of policing in America in this moment. They testify not only to the danger and desperation that police officers confront daily, the people's danger and desperation, but also to the split-second choices and missteps by members of law enforcement that can escalate workaday arrests into fatalities. And as we know, that happens all the time. So really, really deplorable things. Do I have time to read this short statement about the UN people? Because it's really good.
Yes, you do.
United Nations experts on human rights, who all work as volunteers, I just found out, the special rapporteurs. And they say to the United States, the shackling of aged inmate Mumia Abu-Jamal is deplorable. And this just came out today. UN human rights experts expressed serious concerns about the treatment and welfare of Mumia Abu-Jamal, an African-American man who has been in jail for 40 years in Pennsylvania and is reportedly shackled to his hospital bed. Mr. Abu-Jamal had already been shackled to his bed during a 4-day hospitalization in late February while being treated for heart failure. Mr. Abu-Jamal has been denied visits from his family and access to his lawyers and spiritual advisor after being admitted to an undisclosed hospital around April 10th, where he will reportedly undergo surgery. I don't think they have the date correct on that, but that's all right. This ongoing and continued cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment, including deliberate disregard of his dignity and inhumane conditions of confinement, is a clear violation of Mr. Abu-Jamal's most fundamental rights, the experts added. Neither his family nor lawyers have been informed of his medical condition and treatment. The use of shackles during his hospital stays is deplorable and causes Mr. Abu-Jamal additional and unnecessary suffering, said the experts. International standards on the treatment of prisoners clearly stipulate that instruments of restraint are to be imposed only when no lesser form of control would be effective to address the risk posed by unrestricted movement. As well as a chronic heart condition, Mr. Abu-Jamal, now 67, suffers cirrhosis of the liver caused by hepatitis C, hypertension, and a severe skin condition. In late February, he was also diagnosed with COVID-19. We are concerned that the medical condition of Mr. Abu-Jamal could be linked to years of medical neglect by the Department of Corrections of the state of Pennsylvania, the experts said. This situation may also be the result of racial discrimination against people of African descent by prison and state authorities. We call on the authorities to take all urgent measures to protect the physical integrity, life, and dignity of Mr. Abu-Jamal in line with international human rights obligations. Communication and access for Mr. Abu-Jamal's family and advisors should immediately be restored with Mr. Abu-Jamal and with all relevant personnel involved in his health and conditions of confinement. The state must also immediately cease withholding information and access and access relevant to monitoring the status of Mr. Abu-Jamal's human rights. We also call on the authorities to urgently address allegations of discrimination, including racial discrimination, in the medical treatment of prisoners in Pennsylvania, and to take all necessary measures to protect the physical integrity and life of all detainees, in particular older persons and persons with disabilities who seem to have been disproportionately affected by COVID-19, the experts added. The experts have written to the government to express their concerns. The experts are Ms. Dominique Day, chairperson, Mr. Ahmed Reed, Mr. Mikhail Balserzak, might not be saying his name right, Mr. Sabelo Gumedze, Mr. Ricardo A. Sunga III, and they are part of the working group of experts of people of African descent, Gerald Quinn, Special Rapporteur on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, Ms. Tlaleng Mofokeng, Special Rapporteur on the Right to Physical and Mental Health, Claudia Maller, independent expert on the enjoyment of all human rights by older persons, Ms. Nils Melzer, Special Rapporteur on Torture and Other Cruel, Inhuman, or Degrading Treatment or Punishment. Now, what I did not know about this before, special procedures experts work on a voluntary basis. They are not UN staff and do not receive a salary for their work. They are independent from any government or organization and serve in their individual capacity. So I thought that was such an excellent statement to come out today.
Okay. Thank you so much for that, Ann Lamb of Jericho. And as I've said over and over again, that is our book of religion, Jericho website. Go to the website, which is much the work of Ann Lamb, and learn what's going on and participate. And as we say over and over and over again on this program, remember the facts. Chip Fitzgerald was shackled to his bed on his death. Lynn Stewart in the hospital, shackled to her bed, armed guard present at all time. And when she complained, the armed guard says, I don't want to be here. This is my job. And so the goes on and on. Nothing new. We have to do it. But next up, we have Brother Henry Higgins waiting to give us his report.
Good evening, sisters and brothers. I'd like to do two pieces this evening, reading an excerpt from Michelle Alexander's The New Jim Crow and a attempt to repeat the poem from last week by Julia Wright, dedicated to Dante Wright, without error. So I'd like to begin with Michelle Alexander as a backdrop to what's been happening around the country, and particularly in the conviction of George Floyd's murderer, Chauvin, who made it obvious that he intended to murder an innocent man. Today, most Americans know and don't know the truth about mass incarceration. For more than three decades, images of black men in handcuffs has been a regular staple of the evening news. We know that large numbers of black men have been locked in cages. In fact, it is precisely because we know that black and brown people are far more likely to be in prison that we as a nation have not cared too much about it. We tell ourselves they deserve their fate, even though we know and don't know the whites are just as likely to commit many crimes, especially drug crimes. We know that people released from prison face a lifetime of discrimination, scorn, and exclusion. And yet we claim not to know that an underclass exists. We know and don't know at the same time. Upon reflection, it is relatively easy to understand how Americans come to deny the evils of mass incarceration. Denial is facilitated by persistent racial segregation in housing and schools, political demagoguery, by racial media imagery, and by the ease of changing one's perception of reality simply by changing television channels. There is little reason to doubt the prevailing common sense that black and brown men have been locked up en masse merely in response to crime rates when one's sources of information are mainstream media outlets. In many respects, the reality of mass incarceration is easier to avoid knowing that injustices and sufferings associated with slavery or Jim Crow. Those confined to prisons are out of sight and out of mind. Once released, they are typically confined in ghettos. Most Americans only come to know about the people cycling in and out of prisons through fictional police dramas, music videos, gangster rap, and true accounts of ghetto experiences on the evening news. These racialized narratives tend to confirm and reinforce the prevailing public consensus that we need not care about these people. They deserve what they get. And I'll just leave that because she goes on. But she gives a detailed critique of how the prison system works against people of color and those even whites who are marginalized by society. And now I'd like to try my second hand at Julia Wright's poem to Dante Wright.
Please go ahead.
Written April 13th, 2021. He had never believed in Santa Claus, so the bullet was no real surprise. Clinging to the steering wheel, there was no false hope of a last-minute mistake. He knew, we know. For the last 9 minutes and 29 seconds of his air-freshened gasps, he rear-viewed the dancing cardboard Christmas trees of his impossible childhood going up into the fire today. We know he knew. And thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you so much for that, Henry Higgins. I know you out there in computer land, radio land, cell phone land are getting a mouthful. It's short. There's more to come. Thanks, Ken.
All right. Without further ado, we're going to pick up with Comrade Dennis Knowles.
Yes.
He's always active in the civil rights movement and kept his children active. At the age of 5, he went to church to a meeting where Martin Luther King was, and he was marching against unfair jobs, wages, houses, and police against organized people. As I recall that at the end of the meeting, holding my right hand in the hand of Dr. King, I at that time never understood spiritual charge until I had grown into my... In 1969, I joined the Black Panther Party and served in the Free Breakfast Program. In Chicago until 1970, when my mother was gravely ill, sent me to live with my grandmother in Memphis. I remained in the Black Panther Party until it disbanded. I was involved with the Power U in Miami, Florida, and he goes on to talk about groups for social justice. In 2009, he was elected to the Benton Harbor, Michigan City Commission and served until 2013. Joined Louisiana United International in 2019, and he's been with this working group to this date. He's also a member of the Black is Back Coalition. Brother Knowles, your mic is open, and I should let you know that Sister Gwen is also on the list of speakers for tonight. So we will be hearing, hopefully, from her as well. Brother Dennis?
Yes.
And understand on this blog are activists, people who do, people who have done. So pay attention. Brother Knowles, your microphone is open.
Uhuru, comrades, and Black Power. I have a bulletin, first of all, I'd like to read out. I got it from the Black Panther Party right after the Derek Chauvin sentencing today while everyone is up in arms, and we all saying hooray. But you got to realize that, as Sister Betty stated earlier, we need to be mindful of self-defense because a sister 15 years old was gunned down at 4:45 p.m. this evening by police in Columbus, Ohio. Her name is Makia Bryant. I sent you this, Sister Betty. I sent you this information. She died at 5:21. What had happened, four girls had ensued her. She pulled a knife out to defend herself. Someone called and said the girl had a knife. Police came up, not just de-escalating the situation, immediately getting out of the car fired on Ms. Bryant. She died at 5:21, 10 minutes after the verdict was read by Judge Cahill. This is sad. We are in danger. I wanted to let you know that. I'm very upset because every day there will be more police killings of young black people, even though there was a victory in a trial, a show trial. It's like a dog
may
and
I
pony show.
May I remind all of my brothers and sisters and comrades, the Army of Occupation is doing their job. Euphemistically, we call them police. That's a different type of work. The policeman who captured the young man who shot 9 people, killed 10, including the policeman, was handcuffed. That's police work. The young man who shot the Asian, young Asians in the parlors was captured. This is police work. Army of Occupation is when you kill on sight, you terrorize. Your presence is a terror weapon. Let us understand the difference. Let us call it what it is, Sister Betty. Army of Occupation doing their work constantly without interruption. And pardon my interruption, Dennis Knowles, continue your presentation. Thanks again.
Yes, sir. They're on their job, my brother. You're absolutely correct. The system is not broken. It just doesn't work for us. Now, I'm here tonight to discuss the difference between mayoral and city council governments. I was part of the Benton Harbor city government, and we were a managerial run government, which means that the council, we hire or appoint the city manager to do the day-to-day business for the city corporation itself, at that time Benton Harbor, Michigan. In this, we allow the manager who has the wherewithal, the document, the professionalism to run a city, supposedly. I remember the sister last week mentioned that the city managers generally take over, and they only take over because city government, who is supposed to work for, of, and by the people, relents their power. I saw this in Benton Harbor so many times, and when they relent the power, then the city manager was getting kickbacks from the corporation in Benton Harbor. It was Whirlpool, and even some city officials, they buy us real cheap to do their bidding. Mind you, these white folks, these colonizers, they have 50-year plans. And so they developed a golf course in the city on the beachfront property where black people used to run and play all the time. Cannot go down there anymore. They restructured downtown Benton Harbor. Black folks don't go downtown anymore. These are the things of gentrification. These are the policies and practices of cities that say that they serve the people of, for, and by the people. A lot of hypocrisy in a so-called democracy. I'll go further. We talked about the EM law. The EM law was the emergency manager law. That law was invoked in 2011. I had no time as a city official, elected official by the people to represent the people. My powers were taken away from me by the state government. They came in like an occupying force. They sent, and they always do this in black communities, they'll send in a neo-colonizer, a Negro, to come in and say that he's coming in to straighten out the books, the finances of the city, and he would like to have economic streams occur. And under the auspices of saying, well, we need your input, commissioners. We need your input, mayor. And not really taking that into consideration, no matter what your input was, it was never used. He came in with a dictatorial attitude, and he came in and he destroyed. He destroyed the city. He fired 65 employees from the onset. He bought tanks and trucks for occupying the city of Benton Harbor. He bought what they call ERVs, emergency vehicle response vehicles. Yes. And in these vehicles, as obtuse and obtrusive as they were, They held 50,000 gallons of water. And mind you, this was no longer a police and fire department. It was called public safety. They combined both police and fire. And in this, they had purchased these vehicles on the taxpayers' dollars. And these vehicles were so wobbly, if they had to do a chase, they could not catch a suspect or a subject. They sprayed, and they went out and did some maneuvers, and we watched, putting out fires that were exhibits. And these vehicles were purchased through a friend of the emergency, that the emergency manager was getting kickbacks, again, off the taxpayers' dollars. The people. And when they did that, they fired the finance director. They fired essential workers, public safety, public works, not public safety. They kept the police on. But all of the workers that were doing their job, they got rid of them. An instrument, once again, for the corporation to take over a city. This is what's happening with Benton Harbor, and I'm sure it's a microcosm of what's going on in St. Louis, places in this country. Now, I had gone to a meeting to meet with the Democratic chair of the state of Michigan, and I'll never forget when I asked the Democratic chair of the state of Michigan in this Cracker Barrel that I was in, because that's where the meeting was, at a cracker place. I call them crackers, whatever. And this guy, his name was Mark Brewer. I'll never forget when I asked, is there anything that the Democratic Party is going to do to help offset this EM law? Mark Brewer told me then, there is nothing that the Democratic Party was going to do. So we run around here looking for the Democrats to save us when the Democrats are no different than a Republican. A devil is a devil, and the system is the system. So the bottom line was that we got no help, and when he left, Benton Harbor was working when he came. It was there. He was sent there, just like in Flint, Michigan, to destroy the people. That's what that was about. So we went on. I went on personally to recall the perpetrator who supposedly had written the EM law, Al Pachoca, out of the 79th District. And in doing so, I had taken to get 30% of the signatures of the base amount of votes that an incumbent wins in an election. So I needed roughly 2,000 signatures. And by the time I got around to accumulating the signatures or getting as many as I could, well, they ended up rejecting the petition, letting me go ahead and do it because of a wording. If they know that you're going to get those signatures and they want to keep themselves in power, your signatures mean nothing. They'll find the flaw, which lets me know and should let all of us know that we have to break away from a government that'll never do us right. The bottom line, the thing that we saw today, no different than what I've been seeing, you've been seeing all of our lives. No matter if you're in the politics or in the game or you think you're in the game, you're not ever in the game. You're a tool in the game, especially when you're black. You're used all the time. They'll fly black folks off somewhere in a place that they've never been, and they'll feed you. They'll give you a Kool-Aid. They'll give you whatever they think you want to mystify you. They're like sorcerers, and they get from you what they want from you because you've been bought, you buy into it, and you sell it to the public. I saw a lot of that when I was in government, dispelling it. Now, when you go against the grade, I was criminalized, and then I was vilified. And the darndest thing, that whatever, I was purportedly have had threatened someone with a bomb. I also was accused of interrupting phone services. I remember going to court for this. And I asked the judge, he asked me if I had anything to say about this. He said, Mr. Knowles, do you have anything to say about this before I sentence you. I said, well, Judge, I'm not AT&T. How can I interrupt the phone service? I have no power. Did not matter. Did not matter. I was sentenced. I was running for mayor, and that's what they did not want. When you have someone strong that will not bite into a sandwich, won't go out with the enemy, will stay with the people, will stay grassroots, I'm here to tell you that they sentenced me 6 months on a probation for the interrupting of a phone services, and then would not allow me in any debates to run for mayor in the city of Benton Harbor. These were the travesties that I ran against as some public official. And the sad thing about that was that not only till years later did I get calls from former constituents saying, man, you were right. That's how late we are. We have to begin to read. We have to begin to train our children at a young age, if you're going to get into that game, how that game is played. And I relent. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that. Remember, folks, this program is archived. We got a lot of information. Go back and again to what this is all about.
I want to thank Comrade Dennis because he's been there. We have this happened. I'm going to open up the mic. Lauren Swain, I'm going to ask her to you must have two speakers on because there's an echo. And tell us about a political prisoner and anarchist, Sean Swain. Lauren, your mic is open.
Hi. So before I discuss my partner, I just want to do a land acknowledgement because I'm situated on stolen land, and I think as a white person, it's important that I recognize that this is not my land, and I'm not originally from here. So currently I am situated on the Anishinaabe, Haudenosaunee, Lwapanon, and Attawandam people's land. All who have long withstanding relationships to the land of southwestern Ontario and the City of London, where I currently reside. The First Nations community of my local area include Chippewa of the Thames, First Nations, Oneida Nation of the Thames, and Muncie, Delaware. And in my region, I have 11 First Nations community as well as a growing Indigenous urban population. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about Sean. So my partner Sean has been locked up since 1991 for an act of self-defense that was characterized by a crime because the decedent was related to a court official. Sean has been a very vocal critic of the prison industrial complex. In 2012, Sean was subjected to domestic torture, and it was documented officially. Sean's targeting began in 2012 because he wrote an article exposing JPay as a front for a data collections agency for the FBI. Sean continued to be ideologically targeted for his political beliefs, and in 2015, he was actually blamed for a site called Blast Blogs. So that site had published personal information about Ohio prison officials, such as names, addresses, and license plate numbers. And Sean was actually interrogated by FBI liaisons, and they blamed him for this website, and they attempted to trace where the site was being hosted, but they couldn't get it taken down. However, I was actually able to get the website down with a few simple emails. So I just want to recognize that Sean couldn't have possibly fashioned this website from prison. It's actually impossible. And Blast Blogs was used to deny Sean parole in 2016, along with bogus charges made up by the Ohio corrections officers. One of the scariest moments in Sean's kind of living in the prison industrial complex was in 2018 when Sean was being held in solitary confinement. He was being denied food, water, and was only allowed outside for a limited amount of times a day. And Ohio correction staff actually attempted to plot Sean's murder. They were planning to transfer him to Lucasville, and they were going to frame it as a suicide. Their plot was actually exposed by a few whistleblowers at ODRC, and Sean was illegally renditioned to Virginia Department of Corrections, where he currently resides. I started writing to Sean in 2020 and officially started to do support work for him that same year. At first, I had no idea what I was doing, but have since kind of become a semi-well-oiled machine with an amazing team and collective who support Sean. It felt like I had contacted lawyer after lawyer, only to be, like, denied. However, positive news came when the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights accepted Sean's pending claim to bring United States of America before the court for instances of domestic torture that he faced. So as Sean rounds the corner for his fourth parole attempt after being denied three times due to ideologically targeting, we're asking people to do the following. Please head to Swiniak1969 on Instagram. You'll find a link to support Sean's parole. The more community we have to support Sean, the better. You can email hickmanaa@state.gov. That's Hickman, H-I-C-K-M-A-N-A-A at state.gov. And you can urge the State Department to engage in a friendly settlement in Swain versus the United States, case number 14.146. Also, Sean is asking for any legal representation. So anybody out there listening that knows any legal representation that could possibly help a political prisoner, that would be great. And that's all I got. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for participating. And this is a program for political prisoners. And as you know, Julian Assange, as you know, yeah. Snowden, as you know, those to speak truth, have problems, but we David Gill,
we must. From.
And it's I repeat,
Virginia Department of Corrections, Buckingham Correctional.
To accept this call, press 0. Your current balance is $14.90. This call is from a correction facility and is subject to monitoring and recording. Thank you for using GTL.
Hi, sorry, I was on the air, and I think I picked up your call when, like, I was still on, but it's fine. I finished everything, so don't feel bad.
Okay,
yep.
Now, we don't want to get him in trouble. We don't know if he's allowed.
Oh, my God, I'm so sorry. I didn't know I was still on the radio.
Okay, but we don't want to get him in trouble, so we're going to disconnect. We thought you were going to make more, but you feel free to call in and give us updates. Take care.
Thanks, Betty. I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
Right on, we are for real. This is what we do. We deal with political prisoners. Thanks for your time, Sister Betty.
All right. Before we go to Gwen, we see Tom and we see Paul in the wings. Tom Syracuse, your mic is open.
Hello, everybody. I'd like to give you some statistics about the virus. Thirty-two million Americans have contracted the virus, and 576,000 have died. New York City has been the epicenter. However, even though 70% of Americans either have been vaccinated or say they want to be vaccinated, another 30% have said that they have no intention of getting vaccinated. That amounts to 45 million people. Now, what about other countries? There are many countries that have a very low incidence of death and contracting the virus. Singapore, a crowded city state of 5,700,000, it has one of the lowest incidence of the virus and the death in the entire world. That's 0.5%. Yet 14% of the population have not been vaccinated. In other countries, Finland, as all of these have low incidence of the virus, people getting sick or dying. Finland, only 13% of its population have been vaccinated. Iceland, 16%. Norway, Denmark, and Sweden, 14%. Estonia, 17%. Costa Rica, 6%. Now, that tells us, and I'm not, there are people, by the way, who believe that the whole thing about the virus is a hoax. I am not saying that. But what I am saying is, are these vaccines really effective? Can other measures be used? Preventative measures? A very good national health care system
right
that
on.
Will mitigate the incidence of the virus. I believe so. Now, here we have a situation in New York where Governor Cuomo has announced that he's going to open up, or he has opened up the economy. Now you can eat inside of a restaurant. You can go to the movies. You can go to sports events. You can go to the museums. You can go to Broadway theaters. And when he has done this before, it backfired. And he had to close the economy again. So why is he doing this? Why is he doing this? Because a lot of people, not only small businesses, but big businesses and banks and big corporations are losing a lot of money. And he wants to, he wants people, you know, to start spending their money. Well, they don't have any money to spend. The levels of unemployment, home foreclosures have reached the levels of the Great Depression in the 1930s. And so my question is this. Why is it that every year we have a flu epidemic and we have flu shots? Is the economy closed? No. Now, there are many deaths of caused by the flu every year. And they have a vaccine, supposedly. But every year they have to have a new vaccine. And even the CDC has admitted that it is not really sure how these vaccines work. We know in the short term, many people who take the, never mind the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, here they had lost a great deal of money on the talcum powder for babies, and all of a sudden they come up with a one-shot vaccine, and that has backfired. I'm talking about the Moderna and the Pfizer vaccine. This head of the CDC came out the other day and he said said a bald-faced lie. He said that there have been no bad after effects taking these vaccines. This is not true. We know that people have had serious after effects from the second shot. And so what comes to mind is, having everybody in fear, being bombarded on the mass media, get vaccinated, get vaccinated. First it was just people over 60 or 65, then they lowered it to 50. Now it's all adults. Everybody get vaccinated. People are beginning to have doubts about the effectiveness and the after effects, especially long-term effects, which the CDC itself admits that it really doesn't know. So here in the United States, 30%, even though 70% of the population have already been vaccinated or they want to get vaccinated, 30% or a total of 45 million people, and I'm included in that, have said that they have no intention of getting vaccinated.
And well, Tom, you have made your point. You conclude with this.
I want to make one more point. All of this affects political action. People are afraid to get out in the streets and protest because of this virus. And that may be one of the reasons that, they don't do that during the flu epidemic every year. So that may be one of the reasons why the government, in order to detract attention from itself and how this country is run, that may be one of the reasons why they are pushing, bombarding everybody to get the vaccine and to live in constant fear. That's the last point I want to make.
Well, thank you, Tom. While Tom was speaking, we have extended the broadcast. So everyone will get in, and we do have some very important visitors on the call tonight that we must get in. And I'm hoping they'll hang in there. Ralph?
Well, Sister Betty, who do we have next?
Sister Gwen, are you still with us?
Yes.
Sister Gwen, are you? Yes. Your mic is open?
Yes.
Sister Belinda, hang
Thank
in
you.
There. Brother Joel, please hang in there. And Paul,
yes, please.
To dig away.
Thank you, everybody, who spoke so far. I'd like to piggyback on at least two of these conversations. And I don't know, is it the gentleman from Michigan who had run for mayor? I didn't get his name. But
Dennis Noel.
Dennis, I just want to tell you, I feel your pain, and I've lived your life. I, too, have run for public office. I didn't make it, but I know the humiliation of not being allowed to speak. I ran for public advocate 2 years ago, and I was not allowed to speak at one Democratic meeting at all. Every time I would come in and Ralph and Betty were with me, I was shunned. I was this election had 22 people, and I would have to say that at least half of them were raving lunatics, really off-the-wall, crazy people. That just wanted to get their name out there. And I was blacklisted. And I know I was blacklisted because I wrote a very effective letter about my support of Bernie Sanders and delivered it to every single project where I live in East Harlem. And then I went to the projects in Connecticut and put it in there too. Because it really irked me that people wanted to support Hillary Clinton, who had come up with the three strikes you're out bill with her husband, and half of America's population is like sitting in jail that is black. And so I couldn't understand why people were getting behind her. And, you know, the Democrats don't forget anything. And they paid me back with a big silent treatment. And I have to say that I know that if they don't want you in, no matter, you know, whether you win or not, they'll change it to make sure you don't get in. And it's very doable. So I really, really empathize with what you were saying, but I was kind of glad to hear somebody else went through it. Because when you're going through this, it's very effective for people to make you feel like it's only happening to you. It's almost like a gaslighting experience, and you start to question yourself and your footing. And so it's good to keep putting your story out there, because there are other people like myself who really have had the same experience and need to hear others who are going through it. And we need to strategize about how to you know, end that. Now I just want to go over for a minute to Tom's conversation. And I just want to say that I, too, Tom, am not getting this vaccine. I will not do it. What is fascinating to me and so upsetting is the rate of which people are willing to just jump in, because every single night it's pumped on all day and all night on MSNBC TV. It's pumped into every conversation on WNYC. And it's amazing how quickly the government is locking down. I mean, it's like they're locking all the doors. And you know, this vaccine is part of this lockdown, and it will be a worldwide lockdown. And I would recommend to anybody who's listening to listen to Gary Null's show yesterday. And it's a podcast. And it's fascinating how much work he has done to keep bringing illumination to what else is going on here, because there's an agenda here, and it's very big. It's worldwide, and there is so little information about where this virus came from. This virus is not a natural virus because it has a patent on it, so it can't be a natural virus, because you're not allowed to patent things that are natural. And who has the patent on the virus is Anthony Fauci. And all of these things you can find out. They're all listed. These are credible documents you can find. And what was interesting about Fauci was that during the Obama administration, he was trying to create these superbugs. And Obama finally told him, look, you can't keep doing this because it's too dangerous. We're going to defund you. And he was supposed to be defunded. But, you know, he's maniacal, and he kept going forward. And so he was able to get funding from other places, and finally they just really locked down on him and they wouldn't let him get any more funding. So he went over to China. It's true. It was developed in Wuhan, but it was America who paid for it. He is the one who paid for the study, $3.7 million, and that thing has a patent on it. And I don't doubt that there is a virus, but I doubt very much that it's natural, and I know very much in my heart that there is more that is going to unfold with this. And I would just tell people, before you go and jab that thing in your arm, you better think about it very, very carefully. Not too many people are thinking about what it is you're putting in your body. And what it is you're putting in your body is something that's going to go through your DNA and reprogram it. And it's going to reprogram your DNA to actually make this virus in your system. And that's really interesting, because what also was going to happen down the road is once you turn that faucet on, you can't turn that faucet off. And your body in the future could start making other autoimmune diseases like multiple sclerosis and other very deadly diseases. And if you're somebody who's like in your 50s and you want to keep going to you're like 100 like my father, I don't really want to live 50 years of my life with all kinds of other diseases. My body to me is precious. And I'm not turning it over on some government experiment. And you better believe it is an experiment, because every animal was tested for these vaccines has died. Every ferret in the test has died. So we are the new guinea pigs. And by the way, the official trials for these vaccines are actually not over till 2023. But we're sitting here, and we're pumping this crap into our body, and the reason why you didn't see any of the results from animal tests is because when the animals wouldn't stop dying from the vaccines they were getting, they just stopped doing the test. I would say that very Trumpian. So they just decided to stop doing this test. So there's no peer-reviewed studies on this. And I personally know, I can see how everything is closing up around me, and I know even for the next political office I want to run for, it's going to be a big deal that I wasn't willing to take that vaccine. I don't mind if you want to take it, but I mind very much you telling me I have to take it. And I want to underline this. This vaccine does not stop you from getting the virus. It also does not stop you from giving the virus. So this is not a cure. You do need to still wear your mask, and you do need to be very diligent about it. And people are getting very, you know, it's interesting how TV in the beginning was very clear about what the vaccine could do and could not do. But now that more and more people are getting it, they're telling you that now you can take off your mask when you go into a restaurant because there's, you know, very little chance of you giving it to somebody else. It's just not true. And I think that I've never seen anything like this. And I guess when good old Americans wonder why or how Nazi Germany happened, how did people just fall for that crap and just hook, line, and sinker take it? You're watching. It's happening right now. And I would tell you also that I know there are portions of our country that are in a more dire circumstance. They are more eligible to get this disease. And so I can understand somebody who's, you know, much older and much more at risk for getting it, wanting to take it, because they're not going to have, you know, 50 years left of possibly getting other autoimmune diseases. But, you know, I think that there's a lot of things in life that we don't have any control over, but there's one that we do, and one that is very, very precious, and that's your body. And I would just urge everybody to think about it, to try to get the information. There is not a lot of information out there, but there is information out there. Gary Noel covers this very, very well, and he has a few other shows, and he always backs up what he's doing or what he's telling you about with the studies that go along with it. And there is also a couple of different things that you can do once you get it that can cure it. There's a very good antibiotic. I forget the name of it, but they've had a lot of success with this antibiotic, and it works. It's very, very inexpensive. I think it costs like $5 a tablet or 5 cents a tablet, but they don't want you to get that. They want you to take this vaccine, and this vaccine is tied into very, very powerful and powerful people like Bill Gates, who's powerful and has a lot of money, but he's not a doctor. He has no education in medicine, and yet he's sitting up there like the master of the marionette. And he's being poisoning. Sorry.
Covered a lot of space for us this evening, a lot of important space. And, folks, you're not going to get this in corporate media or NPR. This is a very special station with very special information. Thanks, Gwen. Come back next week and finish up. Give us more. We have to move on with more information because there's a lot of important information out there. And so, Sister Betty, next guest, thanks, Gwen. Look forward to your next week's presentation.
All right. Sister Belinda, your mic is open. Louisiana United International founder, Sister Belinda Parker Brown.
Hello. Good evening.
How are you?
Can you hear me?
We hear you very well.
All right, super. I had to step away for a minute. I'm telling you, it's rocking and rolling here in Louisiana, and I'm so excited to be on the show and listen to my brother Dennis Knows out there. Great job, Dennis. We're going to recall all these no-good jokers. Yes, indeed. So thank you so much, Sister Betty and Brother Raph, for allowing me to speak tonight. But we do have some things that are hot and burning that's going on here in Louisiana. I know everybody is watching, the whole world is watching how the verdict came down on, in the wake of George Floyd trial. But more so than that, here in Louisiana, we have a racist, unconstitutional Jim Crow law where you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. And we have identified this law as a trap. And we all know that the way our communities are being policed is a gateway to the corrupt criminal justice system that will weaponize you into the penal system. So what we're calling it is predatory policing. And we want to expose this to the whole world of what's happening here in Louisiana because of the fact that they use this corrupt, racist Jim Crow law to put thousands of people in prison wrongfully. And that's the reason why Louisiana have been known as having more people incarcerated per capita than anywhere in the whole world. And what we're saying, free them all. We want the governor of the state of Louisiana to you know, pardon these individuals, because they are in these hellhole jails and prisons right now as I speak, and with the deadly coronavirus, suffering and dying, and they don't even deserve to be there. So we're calling for people to come and stand with us here in Louisiana, support this great work that we're doing for the freedom of thousands of people that have been wrongfully convicted here in Louisiana. So thank you so much. Go to our website at www.launitedi.org. That's launitedi.org, stand for Louisiana United International, and support us and call us at 985-503-0626. If you have any questions or concerns about our petitions online, our campaigns that we have launched to bring public awareness and public outcry about what's happening here in the state of Louisiana. Thank you so much for allowing me
Thank
to speak.
Sister Belinda Parker Brown of Louisiana United International, and folks out there in computer land, remember, there are brothers and sisters, you know, brothers on the plantation, which they euphemistically call a prison, who have been convicted with 9 and sometimes 10 guilty votes instead of 12 votes every place else except Oregon. And so they are dying of COVID with 9 guilty votes, with 10 guilty votes. And it is merely an excuse for a plantation. The plantation has slave labor. And so these slaves are laboring, and we falsely call them in prison. No, they're on a plantation. We falsely call it police work. It's the army of occupation to terrorize and imprison, and they are in death camps, falsely called prisons. Sister Betty.
I want to write at this moment, before we go to Brother Joel, and we see we've got another guest that just signed on, I think from Canada, but Sister Ann, I do believe Sister Belinda Parker Brown has accepted your invitation to join the Jericho, the New York City Jericho Open House, which will take place
yes.
in May. Sister Belinda, did you confirm that you're interested in participating?
Absolutely, yes. I will be participating, Betty. Thank you so much, Sister Ann. I am excited about that.
Now, we are excited about it, too.
Great.
Okay, so
all right, let's try to touch bases as soon as possible.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Thank you, Sister Ann, and thank you, Sister Belinda. Without further ado, we've got to hear our update and report from Joel Myers. Joel, thank you for waiting. Your mic is open.
Thank you very much for this opportunity to speak here, and thank everybody for the amazing input that comes from off the radio, from all the people that are calling in here. It's one of the highest concentrations of high consciousness that exists in this country and even in the world. So everyone that's listening in is getting a rare treat that in terms of being able to punch through the lies and the brainwash of the media that we're subjected to all the time. Now, I want to speak about the verdict came down today, and we should all remember that Derek Chauvin, who the killer on trial there, you shouldn't really call him just a police officer, though he was wearing a badge when he committed the murder. And the whole thing looked like a very arranged type of thing, and the fact that the killer and the murder victim, George Floyd, knew each other from having worked together in the past job. And it's sort of suspicious that all of this stuff with Derek Chauvin happened after Derek Chauvin arrived at the scene. He was not the first cop at the scene, but he was the one that and that that was most hands-on with the murder, while the others acted as accomplices. So, and they have not been charged as far as I know. And now he was convicted of all charges, but those charges did not include first-degree murder. And this is has all the indications of having been premeditated. And, you know, as a matter of law, when we talk about premeditated murder, it doesn't mean that you were thinking about it for a month before you did it. If people have been convicted for having developed the intent to murder somebody only seconds before they went into action. Pre-murder wasn't even charged. And what he was convicted of was a very watered-down thing, considering the amount of pressure that the state was under from activated public opinion, with millions of people marching across the USA and around the world in horror and anger and revolutionary ferment against this really blatant and flagrant racist killing by the police under the color of law. Now, I just want to issue this one caution, though. The past several weeks I've talked about gathering storm clouds around the world, even including severe provocations and war preparations along the Russian and Chinese borders, especially when they border the sea with big naval buildups. Now, what I want to caution people about is that everybody is celebrating the conviction. And even Biden said something about that he hopes they come to a correct verdict. But a lot of the leading lights of this, a lot of the traditional black leadership, and I'm talking about the top leaders, not necessarily the rank and file, are very closely associated with the Democratic Party. And World War III seems to be just over the horizon, and more and more aggressive foreign policy is being instituted. A lot of pressure has to be put on that leadership not to help Biden sell these wars, because they're part of that same organization. But we know that it's a very important line. Like Martin Luther King was assassinated right after he, at long last, came out against the Vietnam War and applied his principle of nonviolence to the amazing amount of violence that the U.S. was waging against the rest of the world. Right after that, he was assassinated. So a lot of these leaders are under a behavioristic model where if they go along with everything that the imperialists do, they will be rewarded and made into big shots and put on TV and everything else. And if they go against it, they can be assassinated. And there's been a tendency to separate these issues, because the world war, one component of the world war is the war against black America, and the two have to be put together. And the movement against the brutality of the police at home and the other armed forces, including the military, the National Guards, and so on, has to be seen as one with the violence that's grown out of the genocide of the Native people fear the enforced enslavement, the kidnapping of African people here, and the application of the same policy against the rest of the world of enslaving whole nations through imperialism, which is a concentrated phase of capitalism applied internationally with discrimination against the oppressed nations. And one final thing is that when we talk about COVID is biological warfare, and it is a component of the same war, this time launched against the population of the entire world, various nefarious purposes, and that's almost entirely covered up, and we're being accepted. I think when Gwen mentioned before about the different news media that are unanimously and uncritically pushing these vaccines, that outside of it, Gary Noe and maybe a handful of other people, BAI, almost every show at BAI that mentions it really pushes that vaccine in an uncritical way, and even praises people like Fauci and so on to the sky, and presenting him, for example, as a big opponent of Donald Trump and so on. But it has to be remembered that Donald Trump was advised by somebody who, because he wouldn't have it in his own head, to disband the pandemic unit a year before COVID broke out. And then Fauci predicted that a pandemic would envelop the country and the world during the current administration. I believe that was in 2017. So we were already and then Trump did everything he could to minimize compliance with even the most commonsensical measures like masking and everything else, notably even at his own rallies, where one of his big supporters, a black man named Herman Cain, died of COVID shortly after one of his rallies. And you take Andrew Cuomo, who presented himself as the person who's trying to push a lot of these weak precautions like masking, but also loaded COVID-infected patients into the nursing homes, resulting in the deaths of thousands of people. And yet he's still parading around as one of the people, supposedly another one, who was critical of Trump. So these people criticize each other publicly to cover up and to create a fake disassociation. But in reality, right, they all work together for the same goals, and it's a war against the people of the entire world, especially among the most oppressed, discriminated against, and exploited.
Thanks so much.
And that includes the entire working class.
Thank you. And as I said, when Joe comes on, get out your notebook, because it's a college class in political science, and it is wonderful. Sister Betty.
Before we go to Sister Vivian Morgan, who's running for public office on a very interesting goal and objective, I would like to know if Ann or Brother Hagen would want to give the information for people who want to go to Philly on April the 24th, about buses or the telephone numbers or anything like that. Both your mics are open.
You can go to these sites, Millions for Mumia, Mobilization for Mumia, FreeMumia.com, Campaign to Free Mumia, to Bring Mumia Home, and International Concerned Family and Friends. You can pull them up on the websites, and they'll give you the information to direct you efficiently to Philadelphia this weekend. There's a 67th anniversary celebration for Mumia and the continued demand to have Mumia compassionately released. So the traditional websites are accessible with the information that's up to date. And, of course, Ann Land is always up to date, so you can contact Jericho for similar information.
Well, thank you so much for that. And we must go to Vivian Morgan. And as I say to folks, when the Democratic Party was so involved in the cocaine crack law and putting people in jail with stop and frisk for the stop and frisk laws, Vivian Morgan was standing up for the youth of our city. She ran on the platform of legalizing marijuana. And now she's back again, and we must remember who's on our side and vote for that person. Vivia, can you give us a few words?
Yes. Good evening, everyone. And I thank you, Ralph and Sister Betty, for always educating us on what's happening in our right under our nose. And we must stay vigilant and fight white supremacy and injustice for all people, right? Now, I'm running for city council, the 40th district in Brooklyn, which covers East Flatbush, Flatbush, Midwood, Crown Heights, Prospect Lefferts Garden, and Kensington. So if anyone is in that area, please support my campaign. You could go to viviamorgan.com and make a small donation. Also, we're out here fighting. We fought 10 years ago for the legalization of marijuana. Now that marijuana is legal, let us demand reparation for marijuana drug arrests. So the fight continues. And again, my website is viviamorgan.com, and I'm running for city council, the 40th district. Thank you so much for this time. I appreciate it.
Thank you for being who you are. And, folks, as we say, we must support those who support us. We must support political prisoners.
And do you have any more numbers you want to share with people?
Oh, yes, for sure. There's a lot of stuff going on throughout the entire weekend. I was just posting a Seen the Tap forum that's going to be happening on the 25th. If you can't make it to Philly, extremely interesting about Eighth Amendment violations of political prisoners, human rights.
Listen, Ann, where can they access it? Because we don't have much time for details.
All right, everybody should go to the website that Henry already said. If you can't find it there, go to jerichony.org. We have a whole list of everything that's going on this weekend. And if you need to get on the bus to go to Philly on Saturday morning, go to freemomia.com, and you can hit the donate button and donate through PayPal, and you can have your seat on the bus. So it's $50.
There's a hotline.
The number for the coalition is 212-330-8029.
And Vivian Morgan will be back next week and every week until she's elected. Thank you so much, my brothers and sisters, for listening. Sister Betty, will you take us home?
Sister Betty?
Thank you once again, my brothers and sisters, for spending this hour and a half with us. We hope that we have given you information that you cannot get any other place. Join with us. Join with our activists. Join with the spirit. Let us move on. Let us have a new day. And let us begin our new day with Ralph Pointer, What's Happening. See you all next week.
Special thanks and shout out to Brother Dennis for that wonderful report, and to Sister Gwen and Brother Joel and Brother Tom, and as always, New York City Jericho. We really appreciate the contributions that you make. And Sister Belinda, you're always a pleasure. Take care, everybody. The struggle continues.
I wish I could say all the things that I should say. Say them loud, say them clear, for the whole round world to hear.
Yeah.